All right, how's everybody doing? Welcome to Friday here in the great city of Chicago. Hopefully everybody's doing well. Everybody stay safe. Everybody stay healthy. Everybody stay socially distant from each other. Everybody's using hand sanitizers, masks, and not talking to anyone too close. I think I got all of that out of the way. Welcome to Chicago Music Revealed. I'm Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com. And I have to mention, also the Director of Programming and Entertainment at the soon-to-be-opening Epiphany Center for the Arts there on Ashland and Adams. And we are going to be announcing a whole slew of shows coming up starting in September. So stay tuned. Of course, get all of the information at epiphanyshy.com. We are working on a lot of safety measures, a lot of COVID safety measures, and we are working with the city of Chicago. We have a very important health person coming on staff as well. So we're doing everything correctly, and we hope to have live music happening very soon. So epiphanyshy.com for all of the information in regards to the opening. We'd love to see you there, and hopefully we'll see somebody somewhere in person. Now, today it is a very special show because obviously we always do Friday. It's Chicago Blues and Beyond with special guest host Dave Katzman. And Dave Katzman is on the line, and we have a very, very, very special guest. The great Billy Flynn is joining us on the line as well. Billy, how are you?
Doing pretty good, thank you.
Excellent. I'm so excited to have you on. And Dave, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Doing fine. It's great. I'm glad I'm here.
Well, we're back for another Blues and Beyond here on Chicago Music Revealed. And, you know, we've been hitting it out of the park here, thanks to Dave Katzman. We've had Taranzo Cannon on the phone, on the Skype, and no one can forget that because Taranzo Skyped us while he was driving around in his car. So that was a very interesting interview. Not surprising for Taranzo. It was very interesting, though. And then we've had the great Joanna Connors on. And
Bob Stroger.
Bob Stroger was on. That's right. And of course, Jimmy Johnson was on. Great interview with Jimmy Johnson. And before
Billy
Billy Branch. That's you're exactly right. Billy Branch as well. And now
we have Billy Flynn.
Billy Flynn, the great Billy Flynn. So, Dave, you know, normally you and I co-host together. Normally we're on Skype or we're doing different things. Now everybody's on the phone today except for me. But I think this is going to work out well because everybody can hear this. This will be on a podcast. And, of course, everyone listening is able to listen. So, unfortunately, you can't see Dave Katzman driving around in a car while he's talking on Skype like Taranzo Cannon did. But the phone's the next best thing. So I'm going to turn it over to Dave to ask the first couple of questions because I know you and Billy not only know each other, but you've also performed together. You've been bandmates here and there throughout the year. So I'm sure you have a lot of good stories and questions for Billy. So why don't you take over first there, Dave?
Well, I appreciate that. Well, first off, hi, Bill. How you doing? We've established we're all doing okay, but I don't even know where to start with you, Bill. We could talk for hours, but a lot of people out there have heard you, but don't really know that it was you. I mean, you've played with so many people and recorded with so many people. Kind of want to get a feel out for the audience of who the people that were really important that you've played with, and I mean, basically everybody is in the long run, but you know, the names they would maybe recognize or at least recognize their performances. You know, we could even start out with Jimmy Dawkins and Willie Kent. I mean, those are two very big Chicago names. Just give us a feel for where you've been, Bill.
Well, I played with, first of all, Jimmy Dawkins helped me. It really was inspirational to be in helping me get my start. And after that was Johnny Littlejohn and Jimmy Rogers and Mighty Joe Young. They were very helpful to me, getting me started and making me realize that actually I could do what they're doing. You know, I never dreamed that I would, you know, ever be doing what I did. But Junior Wells, Otis Rush, Dusty Brown, I did a couple things with Buddy Guy. I helped put a a band together to back him up for his Lifetime Achievement Award at the Blues Music Awards. I guess there's so many people and that names that might be forgotten by some, including me. the legendary blues man too, I have to mention, Kenny Smith's father, Willie Big Eye Smith and Calvin Jones and Pine Top. For a while, I was actually Pine Top's guitar player. He called me for a lot of gigs, when he left the legendary. So it was a thrill to play with him.
Yeah. Now you're talking all the very, very important people to Chicago blues. I mean, there's a ton more. Might want to mention Jody Williams and Kim Wilson and people like that too.
And you know? Sonnyland Slim. I did some work with Sonnyland with backing him up, which was a real thrill for me.
You have been the consummate sideman for so many years, and you and I don't even remember. I mean, I've known you for way longer than we've played together, and we only get to play together once in a while, but I do remember thinking to myself over all these years that, you know, you should start your own band. I do remember coming to you with that and saying, hey, Bill, come on, let's do this. And it's just been a blast. It really has. I mean, we've had a lot of great players playing with us, but Bob Strozier and Kenny Smith come to mind first. And it's just like old home week when we get together. It's really fun. And how does it feel to be the front man compared to the side man, the backup?
Well, I like to think of what I'm doing as a little bit of everything, you know, which is really cool. I get to be a side man. I get to be a leader. I get to record. I got to play live. So that, you know, it's a little bit of everything. But I think that a lot of times that, when I'm playing behind somebody, I'm really concentrating on what they're doing and I'm trying to feel them out. So I don't look maybe like I'm, you know, having the time of my life, but actually I'm just really concentrated. But when I do my own shows, I get to really be me and step out and, you know, really communicate with the people and basically play for them, you know, directly from me to them. And as you know, we had some really, really great times. And I appreciate you, with the Super Sessions too. We've had a lot of great lineups.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for people who don't know, the Chicago Blues Super Session is just like a gift to all of us on stage. The core lineup is Billy Flynn, Bob Strozier, Kenny Smith, Johnson, Dufar, John Caffey, Melvin Smith, Amy Lowe, and myself. And sometimes there's interchanging members. Sometimes we're Bell with us. Sometimes, you know, Tommy Holland has been with us a couple times. But unfortunately, we don't get to do that too often because COVID has stopped everybody from playing. But even when we were before pre-COVID, PC, it's hard to get all those people in one place at one time. But when we do, we have a ball. It's great. Yeah. It's a magic time, you know. But a lot of people also don't know your involvement with Cadillac Records, you know, and that you actually won a Grammy on that. Talk about that a bit.
Well, the Grammy came from recording the soundtrack, the particular cut that I did with Beyonce, which was an old Etta James song, At Last.
At Last,
which was
right.
Yeah, the Grammy came from the R&B single of the year, which won the award. The movie, I believe, was nominated also. And that was basically a story about Chess Records, which I did most of the guitar playing on it. The lead guitar playing was Chuck Berry and Muddy Waters. And we had Hubert Sumlin in the studio with us, too. So he played on some of the tracks that we did by Howlin' Wolf for the movie also.
So I got to interject here because First of all, Billy, you know, you won a Grammy, and it always helps if you play with Beyonce if you're going to win a Grammy, probably, right? Because that's a good in. But how did you get on that movie? I mean, how did you, obviously, you know, with your legendary status in the blues scene and all that, but I mean, how did that whole thing come about? Because I mean, you know, you're talking about all of these people, and you're about playing on Cadillac Records on the soundtrack and everything. I mean, how were you approached to get on that?
Well, the producers, Steve Jordan, the drummer.
Okay, sure.
And what he had heard about me, you know, originally with the Muddy Waters Association, you know, that I had played with the legendary blues band and mm-hmm. was highly recommended for the job, and you know, at playing the Muddy Waters music, and Kim Wilson, we recently were playing together, and somebody yelled out in the crowd to play some Chuck Berry, and we did a song by Chuck Berry, Living in the USA, and I think this must have went on for 15-20 minutes. You know, I think I even did the duck walk, and it went over real well. So, you know, at that point, he said, "Well, you know, we got Billy Flynn. He can do Muddy Waters, but man, you should hear him do Chuck Berry. That's one of his heroes. So, really, can you know, really do the Chuck Berry stuff." Mm-hmm. And so that's how that came about. But when they sent me a demo for the recordings of what I had to learn at the time, and on there was 4 or 5 songs by Etta James. Now, I was familiar with Etta James back from the earlier era, modern records like Roll With Me Henry, but I wasn't familiar with that last, and, you know, I knew about it, but I just didn't. So I went to work on that music not knowing that they were going to use me on it. Mm. And I wrote out charts, which I really have a hard time reading music, but I wrote out some chord charts for the songs, which were like in the key of A flat and F sharp and very unusual keys, and, you know, a lot of ballads and things that she was doing. So when we got there, we did the Chuck Berry, we did the Muddy Waters, we did the Howlin' Wolf, and he said, "Well, tomorrow we are going to be doing Etta James." I said, "Okay." You know, I was ready for it, uh-huh. and not knowing that actually, you know, they were hoping that I could do it, and that's where the Grammy and the hard work that 2 weeks that I put into it, just basically living with the songs. And when I went back to the hotel room after that, I took out my guitar, took out the music, took out the CD, and I just like worked and worked and worked on it, and had to change the key again because he had dropped everything a half a step, so I had to rearrange it too. So, but all in all, it was a whole week of recording in New York City. It was a really great time for me.
Well, and those tunes, the Etta James tunes, I know from the jazz standpoint, I've played a lot. Those are not easy songs. It sounds easy when you're listening to it, but when you really break it down, it's kind of those are tough tunes, really.
You're right, Mike. They especially when we cut it, there wasn't a piano there, and really, as far as like feeling and hearing the changes, there was none of that. You had to have an internal, you know, like mechanism to keep you on track at all times.
Wow. Well, I remember, and Dave, I'm going to jump in a little bit more here because now I'm
no problem,
curious,
man.
But I like listening. I think it would be good for a lot of our casual listeners that are watching this show. And you and I had a great discussion about it when you and I did a little quick 15-minute interview at the Front Porch Stage last year at the Chicago Blues Fest, which was great. You and I could have talked for like 3 hours, but I think it'd be interesting. I mean, how did you first come into Chicago? Because I mean, you're only from Wisconsin, right? So I mean, how do you come from Wisconsin and all of a sudden come into Chicago and play with all of these legendary guys? They would accept you right away when you first showed up. I mean, or was it kind of like, who's this guy? You know, maybe we'll let him come up on stage. Who was the first guy you actually maybe sat in with?
Well, actually, the first guy was Jimmy Dawkins. And I grew up in Wisconsin, and there was a club called Clark Kent Super Joint, which is a brand new club, which was had 7 days of the week they had Chicago Blues. The first week was Jimmy Dawkins. The next week was Johnny Littlejohn with somebody that wasn't even on the bill, but his name was Jimmy Rogers. So, I mean, we would hang out with them. Me and my brother would go over to where they stayed and like to be accepted. I mean, I never saw anything like that. Mm-hmm. I was sitting out in back with my guitar the first week behind the club. And I remember there was a song that came on the jukebox, Why Sing the Blues by B.B. King. And I was back there playing it, you know, and Lester Dorsey, who is Jimmy Dawkins' drummer, came out and said, hey, how come you don't come in? You know, you sound good. And I said, well, I'm only 14 years old. I can't get in here. And he said, well, I'm going to hold it. And he came and got Jimmy Dawkins. And, you know, that's the first time I saw Jimmy. And he said, well, he said, you want to come in? I said, yeah, I'd love to play with you. And he said, well, I'm going to go talk to the club owner. And brought the club owner out. And he said, well, you know, you can come in if you don't drink, you know. So I just sat there waiting to go on stage. And basically after that, his vocalist, Big Voice Odom, asked me to come to Chicago and record with him. And I was like, well, I don't really know how to pursue that at the time, but... Mm-hmm. They were so encouraging, and you know, one after another, I got to meet them, Luther Allison, and a lot of the, you know, Bob Reedy, he was a great band leader in Chicago. I got to meet all these musicians, and they were so encouraging to me, you know, and I was like, wow, you know, Chicago was something that was always calling to me, you know. I felt a real connection to Chicago, and later on, I realized that, well, people around the world, I mean, like in Japan and Europe and, you know, all over, they love the blues. And look at how far that is. Mm-hmm. To me, I can get in my car and I can be in Chicago in, you know, in a relatively short time. So to me, the world was kind of small in that way that I eventually made it to Chicago because my brother was working there. He had a job, so I would visit him, and we'd go to every blues club, and I got to see all these great musicians and meet them also.
Well, you had probably something where those blues musicians accepted you because they're like, okay, this kid has something, and he's taking this seriously. Because I mean, that's that era too, right? Wasn't it that era where, I mean, and it still happens now to a certain extent, but I mean, back then, I mean, every club was hopping 7 nights a week. Mm-hmm. People were playing. People could actually be a musician for a living, like playing steady gigs on a regular basis.
Oh yeah.
And they were giving though, right? So, I mean, you walking in and talking to them, they were trying to pass the tradition down because they knew that you were serious about it, probably.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, there was another side to that too. And Billy and I are basically the same age. I'm all of 5 or 6 days older, but we came out of the same era. And with the old guys and the genuine guys, you had to earn your keep and you had to be respectful. And if you weren't on stage, they would not hesitate to make sure that everybody in the audience knew that you didn't know your shit. Excuse me. But sorry. I should say. No. But didn't know your stuff. And they wouldn't be so kind to giving if you were messing up. They basically tell you to get off the stage in whatever fashion they wanted. But then, more than likely, they would give you another chance, but you only got like one or two, possibly three chances to prove yourself. So you had to go do your homework. It wasn't like, it wasn't easy. Everyone was giving, but giving with conditions. And that made, certainly made me be conscious of becoming a better player. I'm sure it did to you too, Bill. I mean, come on.
Well, that's a really good point that you brought up too, is that, that what I learned from them, you know, at the time was about being a professional. And how they respected their job and they respected their audience. And they considered this to be a job. It wasn't like being in a band, like, hey, man, I want to be in the band. It was like, you know, you really have a lot of responsibility. And immediately I learned that from them. And even at that time, 14 years old, I was actually a leader of a band. I had I had my old band called the Blues Express, and we had a booking agent. We played all over Michigan and, you know, the northern Wisconsin. So I was already into it, but I further learned a lot from, I mean, man, you know, just so much from the, I had met Howlin' Wolf that same year, you know, and B.B. King. Mm-hmm. So, like, I mean, I had a lot of experience talking to them and what they tried to help me with, what they were saying, you know.
Who was that first gig that you had that was like a steady, where you're like, okay, I'm gonna be a professional musician. I'm on this gig. This is like my job now, and you know, it's the serious business now. You're playing all the time with this one specific group. Who's that first guy?
Well, it's, you know, actually goes a little before that, because I would, when Lawrence Welk would come on, I didn't originally start on the guitar because I was too small. I had a ukulele. So when Lawrence Welk would come on, I was acting, you know, like this is my job. I would sit in front of the television and I would play with him. I mean, it's funny. Just like years later, I was just thinking of that. And I was like, this is the same thing I'm doing. I'm up here playing for a wedding, whatever. I was already there before I did that. But, wow. You know, I through the years, I played with country and Western bands. But the first band that I play with, I guess, would be, as far as a touring band, would be Brian Lee. He actually hired me as a harmonica player. I played harp with him because he already had a guitar player, but we got along so well and just hit it off.
Brian from New Orleans? Brian Lee from New Orleans?
Yeah, you know, he's originally from Wisconsin. So he was working quite a bit, and he brought me into the band. So I would say the first band that that I actually was like, after I got out of school, you know, out of high school, that was one of the first bands. And not too long after that, I got a call from Jimmy Dawkins, and he, you know, we reconnected after meeting a few years earlier, and went on the road with Jimmy, and that basically lasted his whole lifetime. I did a lot of gigs. I mean, Jimmy had other guitar players and used other people, but we always, even right up to the end at Smoke Daddy, I had him during the Blues Fest one year come in. I believe that was his last gig that he did.
Wow.
It was. Yep. Absolutely.
Well, and playing with somebody like that, that's just got to change that's got to change your entire perspective on playing over the years, right? So, I mean, you play with these legendary guys and it passes down to you. I mean, that's got to just change the whole way you look at your instrument when you get, and you're playing consistently with somebody like that, right? It's not just a one-off, but when you're really with somebody like that on a consistent basis, I mean, how does that open up your playing, open up your creativity? Because it's got to be, you know, on a regular basis, that's the key that people don't get anymore, is that regular, steady touring kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, that's really a good question, because when I was on stage with Jimmy Dawkins or Otis Rush, Hubert Sumlin or James Wheeler, I would look at them over next on the other side of the stage, and I would go, man, that's some beautiful sounding guitar coming out of that amplifier. How come you can't get that, you know? And I had to go to the drawing board, you know, and refine what I did, you know, even though I knew the notes and the chords, whatever, just to have that, what I call a professional sound. I wanted to really have a real clean, professional sound. And when I would hear these guys, Little Smokey Smothers was another one. We worked together in the legendary blues band, and these guys had beautiful tone. I mean, and they were playing their whole life long, you know, and I was trying my best, but I definitely wanted to sound good when right next to them, you know, not to necessarily sound like them, but I had to sound good. So that's a good question you made, you know, and night after night, you know, you learn a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can remember. You know, when
I want to jump in on this.
Go ahead.
Hold on, Mike. You know, I've been playing all my life too. I played a lot of different styles of music, things like that. I always played blues,
But in the years I've been playing with Billy Flynn, when we can, Billy Flynn has made me a considerably better guitar player and taught me some control things and sharing airspace kind of things that are very subtle but very important to what he calls the professional sound. And I can never thank Billy enough, honestly, for making me a better guitar player. So just wanted to throw that out there to you, Bill.
Well, thank you, Dave.
Well, and I think this kind of goes back to both of you guys. And Billy, I remember you and I talking about this and when I was interviewing you, but I think it's interesting because you're talking about, you know, playing with somebody on a consistent basis and traveling with them and all that. But I remember talking to you about this, and I've talked to a lot of different musicians, especially with the stature of you who's played everywhere and toured all over the world with all these different musicians. But it's so important because as a side person, as Dave brought up at the beginning, as a side man, your whole goal, even though you could rip, you could play solos, you could do everything. But I remember you telling me this, and I want you to expand on it. Maybe Dave can jump in on it too, is that the whole purpose of your purpose of being on stage with that person is to make them sound good and to blend in and accent and accentuate what they're doing. That's your whole purpose of being and playing with other guys as a sideman. Isn't that right? I mean, both of you guys have done this kind of stuff. It's a hard thing to be able to do on a masterful level because some guys want to overplay. Some guys don't know what to play. Some guys get in the way. Some guys, you know, play too much, all that stuff. So talk a little bit about how important that is.
Well, I think it's, you know, like I wanted to be a musician, you know, and to me, like being a musician was about when I go to a particular engagement or a gig that I'm going to be there with a certain performer. I know about them. I know what they're doing. And I want the show to be the best it can be. I want the audience to be happy. I want the sound people to be happy. I want everybody to make that job smooth. You know, if the drummer drops a stick, I'll go pick it up for him. You know, whatever. If the mic, somebody trips over a mic stand, I mean, I'm there. I kind of like was thinking, you know, this is my role in the whole thing was to make the something, you know, click, you know, and not only musically, but everything behind it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Dave, what do you have to input on that? I'm sure you've done the same. I mean, you've played with so many different people. I mean, just being able to, you know, blend in, right?
Well, yeah, I have a kind of abstract take on that in the sense that I spent many years mixing everybody and being able to separate instruments, you know, with my ears. And I've learned on stage through all the time I spent as a sound person, and I toured the world. I worked 21 years with Buddy Guys as a sound person. Billy and I got to know each other real well when I was working there. Yeah, and he always made the sound man happy. One thing I've learned as a side man is to use my ears.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, use everything else too, but a very important, integral part of it is to use my ears and listen to where I fit and how to support the front person.
Yeah.
But Billy has taught me a lot about that too, and I appreciate that. And as a guitar player in most of the bands I was in, I was the one guitar player. And you know, it was a shared position, but I switched off on bass or something else. Another guitar player played harmonica too. So there was always a change up, and there was always one, you know, I didn't have to leave as much space or integrate into as much space within the rhythms and things like that. I would work with the bass player and the drummer, but to work with a second main guitarist that is the main guitarist the whole night has taught me a lot more about the music, and the only way I found that I can really do it is with my ears.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my take.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Dave, why don't you got a couple more for Billy here?
Yeah. Well, Billy, how has the virtual performances been from your house? How have they been doing? Are you still doing those?
I did a few of them, and I really enjoyed it a lot. It was really different at first for me. But just being into the music with your eyes closed, not knowing that there's not an audience there, it felt really good to me. Like I could feel the people, you know, they feel the audience and feel the, you know, that I was playing for them. I enjoy that a lot. I got a lot of really great feedback from my friends and people that have seen me play too.
Well, some of us were out there playing along with you too. You know that. But yeah, you know, at first I think everybody in when they're doing streaming for the first or the early part of it, it's a rearranging of how you structure your performance to the audience. You know, not seeing them is a really big thing, but then you're actually reaching a way larger audience too. And you know, it's just new to do the same thing. So you know, that's
It is.
So I pretty much. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to jump in because I know I wanted to get your take too, Billy. I mean, you know, we're in the middle of the, you know, COVID crisis. Obviously, all the festivals have been canceled and all of the touring's been canceled. And I know Dave and I always talk about this with a lot of our guests. So I figured as we wrap things up, I thought I'd find out from you. I mean, you know, obviously you probably had, before all of this happened, you probably had a lot of gigs on the books, a lot of tours on the books, a lot of festivals, a lot of everything, because this is the time to do all that. And everything kind of went on a halt. And it looks like we're going to be in this situation for quite a while. But I mean, outside of the live streaming and everything, you know, how are you, you know, handling all this? You're up in Wisconsin, you're just kind of hunkered down, I would assume, right?
Yes. Yes. You know, really kind of just looking to see what's going to happen in the future. Right now, just stepping back and look at it and see what's going to happen. I mean, I don't think we all know how this is going to end or if it is. So I'm just going to just take my time, you know, to be, you know, with my family, be careful. I don't want anybody to be sick. I don't want me to be sick. And I think as a personal responsibility to the whole world, you know, I want to do what I can to make it better.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. Yeah. I mean, I mean, as musicians, all of us are musicians. I mean, that's one of the things. This is one of those, you know, situations that's never happened before in really the history mm-hmm. of the world. And it really affects the entertainers, the musicians, the clubs, the venues, the festivals. And it's not a good idea to get out and pack things, even if somebody might say that it is okay, because you just can't be too careful. And I think that the people that are super careful right now and are being socially distant and wearing their masks and hunkering down are going to help for us to get back sooner rather than later, because that's really the key to this entire situation. But I bet you, as somebody that's used to playing, you know, hundreds of gigs a year, especially during, you know, summer months, so you're probably cranking all the time. Because I remember Blues Fest, I think you played like 3 gigs in one day over there. but
well, at least, yeah.
But I mean, how have you enjoyed outside of, I know you guys talked a little bit about the live streaming, but it seems like to me that musicians are able to connect with more and more people now because they've had that time to kind of look at the technology when they didn't have the time before because they were always playing all the time. So have you found an ability to maybe connect with people that you haven't connected with in a long time just because of the fact that you're stuck in one place and you're connecting through social media?
Yeah, I think that a lot of the musicians that I have worked with, we talk together and try to you know, figure out what the next move is going to be and, you know, and things like that. But I think right now it's basically that just a wait and see situation, you know, for me personally, and you know, and hope for the best. But there's also you know, like I said before, you know, being enjoying so many different things, being inside, man, doing the either being a leader, being everything. I love playing for people. I love to entertain people, and I love to be a side man to help the front man be an entertainer. But at the same time, I could sit in the hotel room, which I have many, many, many years. I have sit in the hotel room where I have days off where I'll just play my guitar, and I can feel every note I play. And, you know, I feel like I'm, you know, I just close my eyes and I'm there. So I'm really thankful that I have that ability, that I don't need to be, you know, a performing all the time, where I can just enjoy. Dave, I know you're the same way. You love the guitar.
Yeah.
You know, it's when you get in the room and you take your guitar out of the case. Matter of fact, when I was on the road, before I did anything, my guitar came out. I laid it on the bed and just would look at it, you know. It would call to me. So I enjoy it so much. So that's given me a huge peace of mind. And also I have to say that my wife, Mary, is such a beautiful person. And she's so, you know, we get along so well. We have a great life together. That's so much to fall
she's
back
a sweetheart.
On. I'm blessed with that. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
You know,
those two are lovebirds. Definitely
like
lovebirds.
You and Amy.
Yeah. Well, I'm lucky too. Yeah.
Well, hey, yeah. Billy, I really appreciate you jumping on today and talking with Dave.
Thank
and I
you.
Know you and Dave are longtime friends, and I know you and I have met a couple times. And every time I get to talk to you, it's an absolute pleasure for me. And I think everyone listening probably really enjoyed what we were talking about today. So I appreciate you jumping on to Chicago Music Revealed, and hopefully sooner rather than later, we'll get to see you actually in person playing for us again on a stage. But until then, I'm going to tell everybody they need to go over to billyflynn.com and check that out. And then you have links over to your social media as well. So when you do something live stream, people can find you over there on Facebook and all that mm-hmm. other good stuff to stay connected until we can all be back into a venue or festival somewhere soon.
Right. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Definitely. It was our,
well, I'm interested to play with you, Bill.
Yeah.
I'm missing playing with you, man.
You too. You too.
All right.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll do it again.
Absolutely.
We will.
Yeah. All right. Take care, Bill. I appreciate it.
Talk to you soon, man.
Right. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
All right.
Bye. Okay. Bye.
All right, that was a good one,
right.
Dave. There you go.
Bill. Hey, they're all good. This has been a blast. I got to tell you. You know, and I just want more people to hear it. And every time now, Billy go out there and tell all his friends about it. And you know, every week, all the blues guys are going to just make it bigger and bigger. So, and gals,
Oh, it's growing. We're getting some good views, some good listens on our podcast and all that good stuff. So this is getting out there, and You know, I mean, and as I was just talking to Billy about it, and as I say all the time, I mean, you know, there's such a wealth of information from a lot of these artists, and a lot of people now are in a position where they're not running from gig to gig, unfortunately, but they're not running from gig to gig. They're not running from student to student. And a lot of the music fans are stuck and they're looking to consume stuff. And that's why I started doing this show. And by the way, I have to mention, mm-hmm. this is episode 70, by the way. Of Chicago Music Revealed. So
isn't that incredible? Didn't we just start this 70. Like last week?
Yeah. Well, man, I'm telling you, episode 70. So I've made it to episode 70. You've joined on the Fridays, and it's been a blast. But before we get out of here, you said you've got a couple of hits here that we need to talk about right at the end.
Yeah, just a little bit of sort of news. I just, you know, you're a drummer, and you know how hard real blues drumming is. Mm-hmm. I mean, It cannot be written. There, you know, the style of Lump to Lump, which was made up by Fred Belo and Willie Smith, you know,
yep.
is a hesitant beat, but you can't write it. You can't write it.
It's like a Latin feel. You know, people can play a bossa nova and a samba. When you sit down with somebody from Brazil, you hear a difference.
Right.
So.
Right. Right. Well, and in light of that, Kenny Smith,
yep.
the son of Willie Big Eye Smith, Kenny Beady Eye Smith, is doing drum lessons on BDIs.com. And for all the blues drummers out there, this is the guy you got to go online and listen to. Because he was raised, you know, in the house around Muddy Waters and Willie Smith and, you know, Fuzzy and all the Muddy Waters band and everybody who came to hang out. This is where Kenny grew up, and it is in his DNA, and not to mention that he's also a very personable guy and gets the information across in a really good way. I'm working to get him hopefully on next week's interview. Well, it's going to be in the future soon. And, you know, I think I got to not just take care of guitar players. I got to be honest. I'd love to have all my friends.
We need some drummers around here, man. Come on. We need some drummers. Let's go.
I did get a harmonica player in there. But we got to cover it all, get some keyboard players and everything like that. There's so many amazing musicians in Chicago.
There are.
And in the country that we can touch base with technology. And, you know, we're going to go for the best of the best. And I just hope that everybody gets the word out there. First off, your 5 days a week, but also the Friday with Blues in Chicago and beyond.
Yep.
So, you know, it's just a ball. And, of course, Jimmy Johnson and John Primer are still doing their weekend shows. So go to their websites, and it's just been great. And that's really all I got for you.
Well,
this
good.
Week,
yeah. And, you know, I'm glad Kenny's teaching online because, you know, Kenny is one of those guys, and I've interviewed him a couple times. I've known him for years because of the Blues Fest and everything. First of all, he's a sweetheart, he's a super great guy, but he's a world class drummer. He's won Grammys, and he's here in Chicago, and he also works heavily with schools. In normal times,
yes.
he's doing a lot of educational stuff in schools and everything else. So Kenny's been giving for years. So the fact that he's doing online teaching, I'd love to have him on so we can talk about that and talk about the ins and outs. And of course, everybody needs to set their calendar when we do announce, when we do get Kenny, because it will be a 4-hour drum discussion. We might, you know, we'll start off with the hi-hat pedal and move our way to the ride cymbal.
Right. Well, actually, I have a lot to add to that. I worked at Frank's Drum Shop. I think I told you.
Oh, you told me that. But yeah, that's right, man.
I've met all the drummers.
Oh,
and I have a very good grasp of drumming for a guitar player. So
well, then we could tell Barrett Deem's stories for another 2 hours about Barrett Deem.
There you go. There you go.
Maury
LaShawn stories. Yeah, who cares? Yeah.
All right, Mike. So good. So we'll announce who we've got next Friday, hopefully on Monday or Tuesday. But I should mention that we've got coming up on Monday the great Orbert Davis, the founder of the Chicago Jazz Philharmonic. He's going to be on. He's doing some virtual summer camps, and he's always doing a lot of different things. So Orbert's going to be on Monday, and we have a whole host of different people next week, but put it on your calendar Monday at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time back here, Chicago Music Revealed. And of course, next Friday, Chicago Blues and Beyond here on Chicago Music Revealed at 6 p.m. with special guest host Dave Katzman. Dave, have a great weekend. I'm going to sign off here.
You too.
All right, sir.
Okay, buddy. We'll talk soon.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Dave.
Stay.
And I want to also make sure that everyone remembers to check us out on, I'm trying to do all my stuff here. Check us out on ChicagoMusicRevealed.com, ChicagoJazz.com, ChicagoJazzMagazine.com, and all of our social media platforms. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. All of these recordings, all of these videos get turned into a podcast, and you can find them on the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience. Tune in Radio, we're up there, Apple Music, Google Play, everywhere you can find a podcast, just search for Chicago Jazz Audio Experience. We will come up. I appreciate everyone checking this out. I appreciate everyone watching, everyone listening, everyone staying safe, everyone staying healthy, everyone staying away from each other. Let's get out of this COVID situation. The only way we can do that is working together. As I always say, thank you for listening, watching. Please share, please like, please comment. Tell your neighbors, tell your family, call the grandkids. Monday, 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. We will be back with Orbert Davis. Stay safe this weekend. I will see you on the next broadcast.